everybody. This is Bobby. I'm an addict, and I got the pleasure today to be able to introduce a friend that I've met up in Medford, Oregon when I first moved here. And I remember going to a Monday night meeting, and she chaired a meeting there and brought her posse with her. And I'm talking about, she's got a big following. She has a passion for H&I, and when I joined the H&I group here in Medford, she was at that time chair of the meeting. And so, everybody welcome Sarisa B, or W.
I'm Sarisa, and I'm an addict from Medford. And, man, I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful to the program of Narcotics Anonymous and the God of my understanding for another day clean and to have the ability to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all today. I don't know why I got a little nervous, but I did. So my sponsor always tells me to tell the truth. And so I'm just letting you know that I just got a little nervous for a second. What I will do is, I don't like to share the mess, but I will qualify for you a little bit. And so, my story goes like this. I started using when I was 10 years old. And I remember that I always felt different than everybody else. We lived in Ashland, Oregon. It is a, pretty preppy town. And my mom was a single mom there. And so I felt different than the other kids. There was, with all the other kids in my school, there was two parents, and there was, they had nice cars, and they had nice clothes, and we shopped at the Goodwill, you know, when we went school clothes shopping. And there was only my mom, and she worked as a waitress. And so I always felt different, and I always was taking care of my little brothers. And I remember the time I was really little that pushing the chair up to the dish sink and doing dishes and helping my mom out and being in charge of my brothers. And I can always remember my parents using. You know, it was, they were always using. They were always, there was always a party. There was always, we were to be seen and not heard, and or we had to go play outside. I just remember that at other people's house, it wasn't like that. When I go over to other Springs house and spend the night, there wasn't a big party at their house, and there wasn't people drinking everywhere. It was just different, and so I was different, and not only did I feel different, but I felt less than, and so. So when I was 10 years old, I remember taking my first drug, and I remember playing on the swings and with two other friends of mine, and I remember swinging on those swings, and I remember this feeling of freedom and this feeling that that I belonged, that I found everything I ever needed, and I felt happy, and I felt joy, and I didn't stop. Since that time, I never stopped. I just kept using, and I kept using, and I found ways and means to get more for a long time. I remember in high school that all the kids, we would go out on lunch break, and people would be smoking and drinking and doing whatever, and after lunch, everyone would start going back to class, and I just wanted to go find more. I didn't know how to stop even then. I remember on the weekends that everybody would party all weekend, and we would lie and say that she was staying the night at my house and I was staying the night at her house. And by the time Sunday came around and it was time to go home, everybody else was ready to go home, and I always wanted to find more. And so I started navigating to the people who did more and who stayed out, and that whole criminal element. And that became a big rush for me, too, the criminality piece, just the adrenaline, the getting away with things, the, you know, I was just cool. And I hung out with the cool kids, right, or the people that I thought were cool because they were stealing cars and they had all the drugs and there was always a party. And so it progressed. It progressed. I became everything that I didn't want to be. I became a single mom with two kids. You know, I never wanted to be like that, and that's what I did. And I remember feeling resentful that I had I had to take care of these kids all by myself. There was, I didn't know about gratitude. I didn't know to be thankful that I had two healthy kids. I just knew that I was missing my life. And I couldn't see that it was by my choices that I was missing my own life. And so my party got bigger. What it ended up looking like is that my disease progressed and progressed and progressed. It progressed so much that I took my kids one day and I dropped them off at my parents' house and I didn't come home. And I didn't come home for a week. And I didn't come back for a month. And I didn't come back 6 months later or a year later or 2 years later. And the only time my family could ever find me was if my name was in the paper and I was in jail for committing some other crime, for a possession charge, for a robbery charge, for identity theft. You know, and once they would see me in the paper, then my family would know I was alive. It got so bad that, you know, I grew up in this valley, and it's a really small valley. And all the people that had known me and loved me and that I went to school with and that were my best friends for forever, they all shut their doors to me. Like, if I came up to your door, they would turn off the light and lock the door and wouldn't let me in. Because I just brought negative people. I stole from them. I robbed them. I was just bad news. And I had no morals. I had completely gone from, you know, everything that anyone tried to teach me. Like, my mom tried to teach me some things about hard work and staying committed. She was always working, even though she was a drug addict. She was what you would call a functioning addict, whereas my biological father was ODing on heroin when I was 10 years old. So all the doors of my life were closed to me. And I can tell you that the only door that would ever open for me was the Jackson County Jail. They always opened their door for me. I always had a bed in Jackson County Jail. The light never turned off there. And I was continually going in and out, in and out, and in and out. It was a revolving door. I remember I was sitting in jail one time, and my kids had written me a letter. And in that letter, they said, "We'll be good, Mommy, if you just come home." And that, to me, was like the most devastating thing I'd ever read. It was like a punch in the gut, like a knife right in my heart. And I realized, like, in that moment that I was hurting these kids, and they didn't deserve it. They were just these little teeny tiny girls. And I don't believe they even read the letter. I believe it was in my mom's writing, and she was writing what they were saying down. And that night, someone in the pod told me about a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I didn't know what Narcotics Anonymous was. I'd never heard about Narcotics Anonymous before in my life, but I knew that if I could go upstairs, I could leave a note for some homeboy underneath the seat, and the thought of that changed the way I felt. So, like, I'm the kind of addict who, it doesn't even take drugs, man. I can take anything outside of myself to change the way I feel, and I will. When given the chance, gambling, sex, money, leaving a note for some dude, right? Breaking the rules in jail. And so what I did was I went upstairs to leave this note, and I left the note, and I sat there, and I gotta tell you, it was like the first miracle I can remember in my life happening for me. I sat there, and the cotton fell out of my ears for long enough, and I heard this woman say that I didn't ever have to get loaded again, not even if I wanted to. And up until that moment, I hadn't realized I lost my choice. I hadn't realized that I no longer had a choice and that I had to use every day, and that I lived to use and used to live. And so what happened for me was I listened to what she said. What she said was not only did I not ever have to go places like that again, but that I could and that I didn't ever have to get loaded again. But I believe that she did get loaded. I believe that she lived like I did, and I believe that she was clean. And I walked out of there with this little flame of hope, like, maybe, and just maybe my life could be different. Like maybe I could do the things she said. And the thing she said was, go to meetings and don't use in between meetings, and get a women's phone list and use the numbers on that list and get a sponsor and work these things called the steps and be of service. And I didn't know what all of those things were, but I knew that I had this little flame of hope where there was once just this black, dark hole. Like, I believed my life was always going to be what it was. And so what happened for me was I got out of jail. I had actually been sitting there for 4 months on a Measure 11 charge. And Measure 11 in Oregon is a mandatory sentence where if you get sentenced, you go to prison for a mandatory set of years. It's 70 months or 90 months. So I ended up getting out of that beef, and I got outside of the jail, and I looked, and it was like, do I go right or do I go left? And man, I wish I went right, but I went left. I went back to all the stuff. I went back to the house where all the people were getting loaded. And I don't know about you, but for me, if I'm in a place where people are using, I'm going to use. And I don't care if it's my drug of choice. I'm going to use whatever you have, because whatever you have is my drug of choice. And so that's what I did. And instantly, my light was gone. It was extinguished. I didn't remember Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't remember about meetings. All I knew was that I had gotten out. I wanted to see my kids. I turned left instead. And now for the next 3 months, it was an endless cycle of me calling my parents, trying to see my kids, and finding ways and means to get more. And I was homeless. I was wandering from, friend's house. And by friends, I mean people who were using their houses. I stayed in a garage for a while. That's where I was actually staying. And what that looked like was, and I was committing crimes. I was committing more crimes. And I was getting loaded. I got pregnant by this man who was, it was a completely abusive relationship. It was domestic all the way on both sides. And I was pregnant, and I couldn't stop using. And I knew that there was a light growing inside of me, and I couldn't stop. And I kept calling my mom and saying, I want to see the girls. I want to see the girls. And she'd say, okay, well, are you using? And I would get pissed off. And I was telling her, mind her own business, and that she's been loaded all my life. And she told me, no, Teresa, I got clean. I went to this place. I got clean, and I'm not using anymore. And I told her I didn't believe her and called BS. And I remember the last day of my use, I was sitting there, and I wanted to die. I knew I was killing this life inside me. I couldn't see my kids to save my life. I couldn't stop using. I'd walk past a mirror and I would turn away because I hated the person looking back at me. My whole soul felt black and helpless, and my world was dark and despairing. I hated myself and I hated you, and I wanted to die. And so I thought, okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to kill myself tonight. And I picked up the phone to call my mom one last time and say goodbye, and what ended up coming out of my mouth was help. And she said, what do you want help with, Teresa? And I said, Mom, I just need help. And she said, no, what do you want help with? And I told her, I said, I have a drug problem, Mom. I need help. I can't do this. And she asked me if I was safe and if I could wait till the morning, and I told her, yeah. And so in the morning, she came and picked me up, and she took me to the same place that she went to get clean. And what they did for me is they took me to my second meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And it was in that meeting of Narcotics Anonymous that I met you guys and the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And what you guys did was you put your arms around me, and you hugged me, and you said, keep coming back. You told me to keep coming back when all the doors of my life had been closed and I hadn't been loved or accepted or wanted in so long. But you guys told me you wanted me and to keep coming back, and that you were going to love me until I could love myself. So what I kept coming back, and I can tell you, in that treatment center, when I got there, I lied about my clean time. I walked in the door, and I told you that I had 3 months clean. My clean time was in November, and I said that because I was pregnant, and I didn't want DHS to be involved in my life. And I walked in there, and they drug tested me, and I still lied. Like, my drug test wouldn't tell the truth. Like, I was so convinced of my own lies. The denial was so thick. And so what happened in that treatment center was I got to see my kids for the first time in years. And I remember looking at their beautiful little faces and the hope that was in their eyeballs. Like, just this bright, shining hope of, like, maybe, just maybe we get to have our mom back. Like, just maybe. And I felt worthless, and I felt like a dirtbag, but I knew I didn't want to rob the light from their eyes ever again, and I made a choice right there to just do whatever I had to do to not steal the light from their eyes ever again. And so I just kept doing what you said. I graduated treatment, and I didn't get to move back to my parents' house right away, you know, no one trusted me, and so I found a different place to go to, and I stayed there, and I went out every day, and I looked for a job, and every night I went to a meeting, and I didn't use in-between meetings, but I didn't follow all the suggestions. I did get a phone list, and I put the women's numbers, not the men's, in my old phone book, because I had these things called reservations that I didn't even know I had yet. And what that looked like was I put someone's name and then NA next to it, and I'd flip and put their name and NA next to it. And I had maybe 30, 35 days clean, maybe, and I had a miscarriage, and I lost that baby because as a result of my drug use. And my mom brought me to her house, and she left me there, and I was by myself because she had to either run out and get the girls and take them somewhere. I forget what she was doing, but I knew I was there by myself, and I felt disgusted with myself. I hated myself. That utter dark despair was just gripping me again. Everything looked black and hopeless, and I was a worthless piece of garbage again. And what happened was I opened my phone book so I could call my connection, because I knew that I couldn't sit with this feeling. And I wanted the feeling to change. I just didn't want to feel anymore. I didn't want to feel anything. I didn't want to feel sad or guilt or shame. And right above this dude's number was this woman's number. It said NA next to it. And I've been sitting around the meetings, like every day I was in a meeting, and I've heard you guys, all of you guys, talk about maybe that's God doing for me what I can't do for myself, or maybe that's a God shot. And I chose, I said, okay, maybe this is God. And I did what I always do with God. Like, I totally bargained with God. Like, I'm the kind of person who is throwing up, and I'm going, God, please, just let me not throw up anymore, and I'll never do it again. Oh, God, please, just get me out of this situation. Let me out of jail, and I'll never use again. I promise. And I always broke every promise. And so I bargained with God this time, just like I did every time. And I said, okay, God, check it out. I'm going to call this woman, and she better answer the phone in 3 rings. And she better say something that changes the way I feel, because I can't stand myself right now. And so I called, and the phone rang, and it rang a second time, and it rang a third time, and boom, she picks up hello. Out of breath, because she had jumped a fence to catch her phone on the third ring. And I looked up at the sky, and I was like, all right, God, okay. And I did something I hadn't done for a long time. I told her the truth. I told her that I hated myself and I wanted to get loaded, and that I lost this baby and it was all my fault because of my drug use, and I was a terrible, horrible person. I can't tell you what she said to me exactly. I can't remember the exact words, but I can tell you the feelings that I felt. I felt like I wasn't alone. I felt loved. I felt heard. I felt understood. I felt accepted. And so when I hung up the phone with her, she stayed on the phone with me for 30 minutes until my mom walked in. And when I hung up the phone with her, I still hated myself. I still felt ashamed and guilty, but I didn't want to get loaded anymore. And that was the first time for me that I could correlate the fact that I wanted to get loaded, but instead I followed a suggestion of Narcotics Anonymous, and the feeling passed. Wait, what? I wanted to get loaded, but instead of getting loaded, I picked up the phone, followed a suggestion, and now I didn't want to get loaded again. Maybe I should follow another suggestion. And so I did. So I went to two different Friday night meetings and to find my sponsor. The woman who I wanted to sponsor me was the same woman who told me that I would never have to get loaded again. The woman who brought that meeting into jail and from the H&I presentation. And so I found her and I said, will you sponsor me? And she goes, what's your name? Teresa? And I said, no, it's Teresa. Will you sponsor me? And she said, yeah. She said she would sponsor me. And then I had to call her every day for 30 days. And I was like, what? Every day for 30 days? That's kind of a commitment. And so what I did was I called her every day for 30 days. And I'd set an alarm on my phone so I would know, okay, call your sponsor. And I would call her, and she'd ask me all these intense personal questions like, where was I? And who was I with? And how do I feel? And I didn't know how I felt. So she gave me this little feeling chart with all these little faces on it. It said, today I feel happy, embarrassed, joyful, determined, all these things, right? And so I started learning how to identify my feelings, and not just that, but identifying my feelings with another person and speaking my feelings out loud. And it taught me that I can survive my feelings, that my feelings aren't the facts. Not always. And what happened was, every time that I called her and she asked me who I was with, it would give me a chance to look around at who I was with. And a lot of times I didn't want to tell her who I was with. I mean, I was with people who had one day clean, because those kind of people were attracted to me, were attractive to me with the mess and the chaos and the trauma and the stuff. And I would get away from those people. And so I learned about who I wanted to be and where I wanted to be and the people I wanted to be like. Like, I didn't have any of the qualities that the people I wanted to be like had. I didn't know how to be honest. The most honest I could get was, I'm Teresa and I'm an addict. I couldn't tell the group what I was feeling, but I started to be able to tell a sponsor how I was feeling and what was going on with and so we worked at first step, because that's what me and my sponsor do. We work steps. And I learned that I was powerless and my life became unmanageable. And what that did for me was it showed me that I wasn't a terrible, horrible piece of dirt person, that but when I use, I make terrible, horrible choices that not only have consequences for me, but have consequences for everyone I love, my community. And there was some freedom in that, you know? But still, I was left with this thought, okay, I'm totally powerless, but what is more powerful? And so we moved right on to the second step. And all the while, I'm working these steps, I'm getting right in the middle of Narcotics Anonymous, and my sponsor said, get in the car, and I always had to jump in the back seat because I had the least amount of time, and so there would be whoever up front because they had 5 years, and someone next to me because they had 2 years, and someone else because they had 6 months, and I'd have to sit on the hook because I had too much, you know? And so it kept going like that, but I always got in the car whenever she said, and she always took me to the coolest places, like conventions and meetings with her and women's things. And I just didn't want to get loaded again. So I just kept doing what I was supposed to do. And the next thing I was supposed to do was the steps. And the second step I came to believe that there was a God, and there was so much hope in that, because God was more powerful than my disease. And my God didn't have to be your God, or her God, or his God, or a him, or an it. My God was my God, and I got to define that. And what was really powerful for me too was that there's a God, and I'm not it. And that was freeing. So my life still looked crazy. I had committed a crime right before I gotten clean. I had been with some other women, and a woman got hit in the head with a baseball bat, and she got 12 staples in her head, and I had a part of that. And my life was pretty crazy. I had people talking to the police and saying that, I had a part of it and it was my fault, and people telling on me, and the people trying to set me up on the phone, like all kinds of crazy stuff. And so I'm running around and I'm telling my sponsor, like, I know how to deal with these people. I've got zip ties in my trunk. I know what to do with people who are telling on me. And she reminded me that I don't live like that anymore. She reminded me that that's actually witness tampering, and it's another charge. I don't want another charge when I'm looking at these other Measure 11 charges. And she said, it sounds like you're right where you're supposed to be, because I was in the middle of the third step of making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And what that looked like for me was I would be all stressed out and crazy and telling her, oh, all this drama that's going on, and she'd go, stop. Put your hands in the air and surrender. And it didn't matter where I was. I'd be in the subway parking lot, and outside of the meeting, inside of the meeting, because I answered my phone when I was in the meeting, and I get in trouble for that, too. I don't touch my phone in the meeting now. I would say, I surrender, with my hands in the air. And she'd go, no, I can't hear you. I go, okay, I surrender. She'd go, no, I can't hear you. I surrender! And when I did that, she would let me get off the phone, and I would feel this peace come over me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's not my stuff. I'm completely powerless. Only God is in charge of that stuff. And so I let God, if I was powerless, I acted powerless, and I let God be in charge. What I can tell you is that I got involved with service work, and I would go bowling with everybody on Friday nights, and people knew what was going on in my life, that I had all these things, this trial hanging over my head. And I remember when I was about to get 9 months clean, I went to the meeting, and before the meeting, I called my sponsor and I told her I actually don't have 9 months clean. I didn't get clean in November. I got clean. Well, I didn't get clean in November. I went to treatment and I lied. And we talked about being honest and working an honest program, and what that means, and how if I didn't tell the truth, then at some point I would probably get loaded over that little lie. And it's our secrets that keep us sick, just like our basic text talks about. So she said, I'll let you think about it for a little while, and you can tell me what you want to do. And I said, okay. And about a minute later, she said, okay, what's your clean date? And I told her 2/25/05. That's my clean date. And I haven't had to use since then. So I went to the meeting that night, and instead of picking up 9 months, I picked up 6 months, and I told the truth. And I told you guys that I'm a liar, and I lied because I was afraid. And you guys surprised me again. You didn't tell me to leave. You told me to keep coming back again. You told me to keep coming back, even though I'm a liar. And you hugged me, and you loved me, and you welcomed me. And other people stood up at different times that week and told the truth about their time. And I saw the power in the truth. That I saw the unity of the fellowship. And I saw the love in the heart of the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship, that I could be a liar, and you still loved me and told me to keep coming back until I could learn the way to live that you've learned to live. And So I kept coming back, and I kept working steps. I worked a four-step, and my four-step, I was really afraid. I carried around my backpack all the time because I was afraid that if anyone read what I had on my four-step, I was going to prison for a long, long time. I was back home with my family and my kids. I found a job that I could go to work at 6 in the morning and be off work at 2. And so I got to pick my kids up from school, and I would, you know, take care of them at night. I would feed them dinner. I would help bathe them. I would get them in bed, and then I would go to a meeting. I would help them do homework at the counter, and I was just bonding with my family and my kids again, and it was so awesome. I felt so much joy and so much happiness during this time, and I was just in love with the program of Narcotics Anonymous, just absolutely in love with not only the program, but the fellowship with you guys, too. And so I went to meetings on a regular basis, and I think it was, when I actually really did have 9 months clean, I was still in the middle of my fourth step. I wasn't quite done writing on it yet. I got arrested, and I went to jail for that Measure 11 crime. And I remember them taking me to court, and the DA was trying to raise my bail to $1 million because I'd just gotten off of a Measure 11 crime 9 months ago, and he wanted me. And I went before the judge like I always did. Like, I can tell you I've been inside the courtroom at least 50 times, if not more. And I look in my little green outfit, and I look over to the left. And over at the left, when I walked in the courtroom, was my mom and my boss from work and people from the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You guys were there. And when you told me that I was never alone, never again, you meant it. And you showed up for my courtroom, my court appearance. And what you said in that courtroom was that I was different and I had changed my life, and that I'm working a program, and that I'm honest, and that I give back, and that I love my kids, and that my mom said that, told them that I give her my paycheck. As soon as I get it, I take out money for cigarettes and gas, and I give her my full paycheck for rent and to help out, to, like our seventh tradition talks about, to be fully self-supporting. And I was living this program, and you guys told the judge that, and the judge looked at me. And he goes, man, I've seen you come in front of my court so many times. I don't know, but something's different. Something's different. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm not going to raise your bail. And he kept my bail at an amount where 50 grand, where I could get out with 5,000. And I got out, and I got to spend my first Thanksgiving and Christmas with my kids in so long. We went snowboarding, and, you know, we did all this. We played board games. I remember sitting in front of the fire at my parents' house playing board games with my kids. And, man, just seeing the joy in their eyes and just being present with my family, it felt so good. Like, I felt just overwhelmed with gratitude and thankfulness. And so we went. I remember I wanted to run a lot. I wanted to, I was afraid. I was afraid to do 90 months, almost, 70 to 90 months in prison. I was terrified of it, and so I wanted to run a lot, and every time I wanted to run, I picked up the phone instead, because that's what my sponsor directed me to do. And so I picked up the phone, and I called someone in the program, and you guys would come pick me up, and you'd take me to a meeting, and I would go to the meeting, and I'd sit there, and the feeling would pass. Like, man, it was so powerful for me to have a feeling, not react to it, but respond to it. And over the course of an hour, sitting in a meeting, hearing about everybody else's struggles and everybody else's solution, like the 12 steps and my sponsor and talking to friends and feeling loved and supported, my feeling would change and I'd be okay and I could sit in my skin again. And I wouldn't have to run from, and I wouldn't let the fear chase me out of the room or chase me out of my life. And so I went to court when, actually I got a year clean. I'll talk about that real quick first. I got a year clean, and it was a huge, huge, huge accomplishment for me. I couldn't believe it. I got to get one of the coins, And I can tell you that there was there's a man who sits in the room, and we celebrate together. And I walked into the room, and he had I walked into the room, and I was so excited because there was like 10 balloons everywhere, 10 cakes, and I was like, "Yay, a party for me! Oh my gosh, I'm so important! Woo!" You know, self-obsessed yearling. And the truth was that it was his 10-year celebration, and I did have a cake and a balloon, but the rest were for him. And I love that man. I love Tom C. And I love that I get to celebrate my birthday with him and my Queen Day. And so I made like one of the biggest accomplishments in my life, and I felt so proud of that. And we went to, remember, I went to court after that, and I wouldn't let my kids come to my trial because it was pretty graphic, and I didn't want them to be a part of that. And I went to court every day, and the last day I was supposed to wake my kids up and kiss them and tell them goodbye, and I walked into the room and they were just cuddled up there on the bed together, and I swear they looked like angels, just like angels, and they were so peaceful that I just didn't have the heart to even wake them up. And you know, and I knew that the God of my understanding had me, and that there's a plan for my life. And I walked into that courtroom on the last day, and I told my part. I told my truth. I didn't, because I'd done a four step, I came to know that I had a part, and I played a part in every situation in my life, and that I'm not a victim. I have victims. And so I told my truth, and I told my part, and I didn't tell her part or her part or any of their part. I just talked about my part. And when I was done with that, I was convicted of that Measure of Loving crime and sentenced to 70 months in prison. And I remember getting handcuffed and taken right there from the courtroom in front of all of you who showed up to my court date. I remember the disbelief, and I remember feeling betrayed, but the biggest feeling I had was regret that I didn't wake those girls up and I didn't kiss them and I didn't hug them, and I broke my word to them one more time because I didn't wake them up, but I promised them I would. And they took me back to my jail cell. And I remember for 3 days just raging in that jail cell. I was full of anger and bitterness. And I felt dropped on my head by the God of my understanding. Like, I trusted that God had a plan. How could this be God's plan? 70 months in prison? 5 years and 10 months in prison? And if this is God's plan, I don't want any part of it. I do not want any part of it. This is the dumbest plan I've ever heard. And my thought was, why did I do this? Why did I give my kids the hope that I was going to be around? Why didn't I just stay gone? I could have just died. It would have been so much better, right? Like all these thoughts and feeling so sorry for myself and so overwhelmed and betrayed. And my eyeballs were swollen shut from crying. Like I literally could not see. And I remember sitting against the wall on the concrete floor between the toilet and the sink. And it was just this little tiny space. And I had my knees up to my chest and my head and my hands. And I remember just being devastated. And I believe it's like the second miracle that I remember in my recovery that was like really, really stood out to me. What happened for me was that I remembered my last day using. And my last day using, I just didn't want to die. My last day using, I wanted to die. And this day, I just didn't want to go to prison. My last day using, I wanted to die. And this day, I just didn't want to go to prison. So I had a life. I finally had a life that I want to have. Yeah, I had to go to prison, but I had a life that I didn't want to lose. And so I put my hands up. And I put my hands above my head and I said, "I surrender." And it was at that moment that I just quit fighting. And I just surrendered to the fact that I'm an addict, and there's a solution, and that solution is the 12 steps, and the God of my understanding, and being of service, and so what can I do? What am I going to do? How am I going to stay clean in prison? How am I going to go to prison and know all these people that I love? Because I know a lot of women that were in prison and that I loved. And so how was I going to go there and stay clean? And so I turned my court papers over because those are the only papers they let you take. And on the back, I wrote my goals, just like my sponsor taught me. She taught me to write, and she taught me to write goals, and she taught me to journal, and she taught me to talk about my feelings. And so I wrote on the back of those papers, I wanted to have almost 7 years clean when I came home. And I wanted to get a closer relationship with the God of my understanding. And I wanted to somehow be a parent, even from prison, to my children still. And I wanted to finish working the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and I wanted to give back to other women. And so what I did was I went to prison, and I can remember those doors slamming behind me, ching, 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 all the way down the line. And I was just so afraid. I was so afraid, and I got on my knees, and I just prayed. And what I did was when I went out into the day room, I would sit out there, and I would put my Narcotics Anonymous stuff all around me on my table. And the women that I knew there, they knew that if they were loaded, they couldn't sit at my table. And, like, I would talk to them and hang out with them, like, probably usually before they found whatever they were going to find for the day, because that was always a struggle for them, trying to find out how they were going to get high. And so I would talk to them before then, and I know it's a program of attraction, not promotion, but my first few years in prison, I promoted the shit out of Narcotics Anonymous, and because I had to. Because I had to speak out loud and say my truth and put up my boundary and put up my barrier. And it was really lonely. Like, I was surrounded by the disease. And it got really lonely. And what I can tell you is that I continued working steps. I got moved to a county jail right before I was about to hug my kids for the first time. I finally, I'd been in prison for a couple months, and my kids were going to be able to come up and visit. And because of prison overcrowding, they moved us to a county jail, and there's no hugging or touching in the county jail, and the prison's almost 300 miles away from our hometown. So I got moved. I remember I was on a six-step, and I was watching women come in and out of county jail, in and out, every weekend. They'd be lodged for the week, in the weekend, and then they'd get popped out. And then a week later, the same women would cycle back in. Just like me, right? Just like I used to. But at that point in my recovery, I remember I called my sponsor and I said, I am not like any of these women. These women, I cannot believe them. If I had the chance to get out, I would never come back. And she laughed at me. And she goes, actually, if you spot it, you got it. And so about 17 pages later, I was done with my sixth step. And all my defects, and my sponsor actually used her HMI credentials to come up there and visit with me in the lawyer's booth, and I got to read my sixth step with her there, and it was so empowering to learn that not only did I have these defects, but that I could practice spiritual principles, too. Spiritual principles like faith instead of fear, and love instead of hate, and honesty instead of dishonesty. Like, now I had a choice, and when I stop and I humbly ask God to help me, I get to have the choice to act and respond with a spiritual principle instead of my character defect that I always have. And so here I am, I'm in prison, and I'm in county jail in prison, and I'm learning how to live differently, and I'm living differently. And so I'm advocating for myself, and I become an ABE. I got moved back to prison. I finally get to hug my kids, and I decide that if I stay good, and I don't get in trouble, I can reach a level where I get to do Girl Scout scale bars with my kids, which looks like my kids get to come visit me once a month, and we get to do a craft and eat lunch together and spend 4 hours together with the other moms and their Girl Scouts. And so, like, that's what I look forward to, just that one time a month where I get to see those girls and do a craft with them and eat lunch with them. I'm just like, okay, I can just get through the month. I get to see my babies. Just get through the month. Just don't open your mouth no matter what. Just keep your hands to yourself no matter what. You know, and I didn't want to get loaded in there. Like, that didn't look attractive, but I really wanted to beat the shit out of somebody sometimes, you know, because people were, it was just really annoying. And I just didn't, no matter what. And I started tutoring women through the ABEG GED program, and so I was starting to be able to give back to these women that didn't have an education and didn't know how to read, some of them. And I was so grateful I got to be a part of that program. Like, I couldn't believe that I was actually getting to help other people, and my sponsor would come once a month, and sometimes it'd be every other month, and we would work steps together in the visiting room. You know, I would work a step, I'd send it to her through the mail, she'd read it, she'd come back to visit me in jail, in prison, and we would talk about my step. And, you know, I remember doing it, a ninth step, and a lot of that stuff I just had to do a living amends on, but some of it, like my bills, and the stuff that I knew I owed, I wrote to those companies and I told them my situation and that I wanted to pay them and that, I would, you know, this is where I was for right now, and, kind of bit me in the ass later when I came home because I restarted the 7 year thing on that, and so, so I'm still paying on all those bills because they've gained a lot of interest. But I was doing it. I was doing the things that I was supposed to be doing and that I wrote on my goal sheet. And I kept my goals in mind. And I got closer to God. And I advocated for myself to do different kinds of programs so I could change, so I could be better, so I could be different. Think for a Change and Pathfinders and the computer tech program. I went to that and I broke barriers there. You know, I became an aide and a lead, and I actually got to be a teaching assistant, and I got to help teach that class, and I got to advocate for other women who came after me, who actually did get in trouble but wanted to change their lives now that they were in prison. And so I got to be the voice that said, we get to give people a second chance. Like, let's believe in second and third chances for people. Let's not give up on people. Let's not quit 5 minutes before the miracle. And that's what I got to say to the teacher there, and he believed me, and he had that same vision. And so I remember when I got 5 years clean, I got to go to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in a couple years since I'd been moved to minimum. It was really hard to get on the list to go to those H&I meetings because women would go there to see their girlfriends and to exchange contraband, and so they stayed on the list so they could do that. And people like me who really wanted a meeting didn't get to go. So I remember I was feeling really sad and depressed, and I had 5 years clean that exact day, and I went to the call-outs, which would tell you what you're going to do for the day in prison, and mine said NA. And I remember sitting in that NA meeting and hearing our readings. I remember just crying because I was so grateful. I got to sit in the meeting. And so what I was doing started attracting people, and they wanted to know how I could have the life that I had inside of the most dismal, dark place they've ever been in their life. Like, I've had women tell me, you are like a ray of sunshine bouncing across the yard, like sun was just shining down on you, and you were a ray of light to every single person that you touched. Every table where you talked to, you brought sun and light and love, and I want that. And so I got to start sponsoring women in prison, and we would work steps on the yard. And I remember I was talking with, you know, one sponsee. She's actually sitting right here with me now, and she had 70 months that she was doing, and
she was doing her first lesson. We were sitting on the yard, and she's looking around, and people are looking at her like, what is she doing with that Narcotics Anonymous drug? Like, what is going on? Because she didn't go to prison clean. She got loaded for a long time in prison, and they would see, they saw us working the steps, and I looked at her, and I said, hey, no, we're right here. This is what we do. This is living different. This is what we do right here. I didn't know this is what we do because I've never worked steps on the yard before, but I told her that this is what we do. And I stood behind it, and so I continued to work steps with her on the yard and with other women. And people were recovering in prison in the darkest place that there was. She was clean, and the people behind her were getting clean. I was sponsoring women. She was sponsoring women. They were sponsoring women. You know, and on January 9th, 2012, I paroled and I got to come home. And I came home to my kids and to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. It was some really crazy times when I came home, and I'm actually not going to talk about that part. What I am going to talk about is I remember it was about a week I'd been home. And I went to my sponsor's home group and the candlelight meeting on Saturday night, and I was sitting there and the lights went off and I heard the readings. And I sat there and I just started crying, and I knew I was home. I knew I was free and I wasn't in prison anymore. And I was so grateful. And so I got involved with H&I, and I couldn't go into the jail or the prison or the work center or any of the places I wanted to go right away, but I stayed a part of H&I. I became vice chair and I became chair, and I just stayed committed to that that committee because I wanted to bring the message back to the women. I wanted to tell them, like I kept telling my sponsees in prison, I said, this is what we're going to do when we come home. We are going to be a part of H&I. We're going to bring the message of recovery back. Those seats are our seats. And I got to go back into the prison, and I got to carry a message actually to my sponsees, to my sponsee for her graduation from the computer tech program. They invited me to speak, and I got to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I also, my life has just been so amazing. I started work at this company that I started in the dirty, dusty returns room, you know, and I just showed up and I brought the spiritual principles this program taught me. I stayed committed and dedicated, and I showed up on time, and I broke barriers there too. And now, 6 years later, I am the production supervisor. I am in charge of 5 different departments. I have a fat salary, 401k, dental plan. I have paid time off, paid vacation. I can tell you that I used to be a girl who couldn't get out of this valley. A lot of times I couldn't get out of whatever bathroom I was in. And I'm a woman who's now gone to Hawaii, and I got to swim with turtles and the most colorful fish you've ever seen. And I remember swimming with the man who's my husband now. We were swimming out to sea, and him and this turtle are swimming side by side, and I'm swimming behind them with my snorkel on. And this feeling came over me of just peace and serenity. And I thought to myself, this is freedom. This is what freedom's really like. And it's true. Narcotics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I can tell you about like all the monetary things I have, but what's really, really my heart is being able to go back in now. I'm finally off the paper. I've been able to go in for a couple years. I was the women's work center panel leader, and now I'm the jail panel leader. And I get to take meetings into women who can't get to meetings or who maybe have never heard a message of hope. And I get to tell them that they never have to use again, not even when their head tells them to, not even when they want to. I get to tell them that I love them and I'm saving a seat right next to me. The relationship I have with my daughters isn't always what I want it to be, but they know that I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. They know that I love them and I support them. I think they know that I won't enable them. I try not to. And I save the seat for them too. And, like I said, Narcotics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm married to my best friend. I've never had a relationship like that before, like where we actually communicate and talk, and there's no name calling or hitting or violence of any kind. You know, there's just love. And he works the program, and I work the program, and we don't work each other's program. And I've got to sit on a panel with the woman that, you know, I sponsor in prison. She came home and she got to have a job where I work. And, you know, we got to sit on a panel together and share our experience, strength, and hope that we do recover and we don't ever have to get wounded again. I'm just so grateful. And there's, I'm just so grateful. Like, I could have never imagined that I have the life that I have today. And it's all because of the program of Narcotics Anonymous, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and the God of my understanding who is so gracious and merciful. Like, I am overpaid. I'm overpaid. Thanks for letting me share.